good evening, everyone. This is Luke Caverly. You're listening to the Divided Kingdom radio show, a radio show that my late wife, Elizabeth, always said was a new show with a Christian emphasis, and I'm trying to keep it that way in her honor. Well, what do we got tonight? Let's begin with this Fox News article. This came out on Monday, December 8th, 2025. The headline read, Minnesota's $70 million fraud exposes how Democrats build a system designed to be robbed. And the subheadline, over 70 people have been charged in Minnesota's Feeding Our Future fraud case, as officials feared racism accusations more than protecting taxpayer money. And this is by Jason Rance, Fox News. And a lot of you may have seen Jason. He was a frequent guest on Fox News, always pretty interesting in my opinion. Well, it begins, for years, Democrats assured us that expanding government programs was an act of moral heroism, that the only thing standing between America and utopia was more taxpayer money flowing through more, quote-unquote, community-based nonprofits embracing equity-centered missions. And Minnesota happened, exposing a truth the radical left will never admit. This system isn't broken. This is exactly how it's designed to work. Over 70 people connected to the Minnesota nonprofit named Feeding Our Future face federal charges in the country's largest COVID pandemic fraud scandal. It was primarily Somali American defendants who allegedly stole funds meant for low-income children by submitting falsified invoices, fake meal counts, and fabricated rosters. The organizations billed the government for tens of millions of unserved meals, using the stolen money for luxury cars, beachfront property, and homes. It's jaw-dropping, but it's not surprising. And it happened because Democrats built a system practically engineered for abuse by the nonprofit industrial complex. Here are the five reasons the fraud was so easy to commit and why the same conditions exist in states across the country. Reason number one, Democrats build programs with almost no guardrails by design. It's easy to blame COVID chaos for what unfolded in Minnesota, but the fraud wasn't subtle. COVID-19 simply provided the political cover to dump hundreds of millions of dollars into a broken, low oversight system. According to DOJ, that is Department of Justice indictments, the perpetrators' lies were ludicrous. One defendant, and I'll see if I can take a crack at his name here, Abdirashid Dool, D-O-O-L, claimed and claimed his site in Pelican Rapids, that would be Minnesota, was serving 6,000 meals a day, 7 days a week. Now, the entire population, children and adults, of Pelican Rapids is less than 2,500. So get that? I'll interject to make that clear. Population 2,500, meals served 6,000. Going on, another network of sites, Empire Cuisine, fraudulently obtained more than $47 million. This level of cartoonish fraud was only possible because state agencies rubber-stamped the reimbursements. The priority was not accuracy. It was speed and political optics. The minute the program is tied to a specific, quote-unquote, vulnerable community, Democrats in power lose the nerve for a genuine audit, bearing a PC backlash more than losing taxpayer dollars. They prioritize the appearance of service over the actual delivery of food, creating an oversight-free slush fund And I shouldn't have checked here. This is Lily speaking now. Although it hasn't mentioned it yet, and I'm not sure that it does in this particular article, I've heard estimates that it could be $2 billion. That's billion with a B. $2 billion that were stolen. And I don't think that's too strong a word to say, stolen from the government. For these so-called charitable programs, which obviously were nothing of the kind. And if you ever want to know what $2 billion looks like, all you got to do is write down a 2 and put 9 zeros after it. You know, as a math teacher, I would sometimes have my kids do this because they hear these huge numbers, billions, trillions, much less millions. They get these bandied about all over the place, as if they were just a common everyday number. Well, take a look sometime at a 2 with 9 zeros after it. Doesn't look quite so common. Ah, what you and I could do if we had that much money. Buy our own private islands. Oh, the ideas are just without limit. Well, now let's go on to reason number 2. For these frauds being so common. Number 2, ideology blinded Democratic leadership to obvious fraud. The scandal metastasized because the perpetrators claimed to serve a marginalized refugee community. In the modern Democratic Party, that instantly grants immunity from scrutiny. Minnesota officials were accused of racism if they questioned the obviously fake claims. Feeding Our Future, and remember that was the name of the program, Feeding Our Future advocates figured that out early and used it as a shield, accusing officials of discrimination the moment anyone asked why the numbers didn't add up. This ideological paralysis isn't unique to Minnesota. Around the country, anything labeled equity or community-centered or culturally specific gets waved through without a second look. The result? Truly vulnerable communities get nothing, while politically connected insiders walk away with millions. Now, reason number 3 why these frauds come about, the nonprofit industrial complex. Now, that's Jason Rance's little take on the military industrial complex. The nonprofit industrial complex and the crony network. This scandal metastasized because the perpetrators claimed to serve the state's massive Somali refugee community. In the modern Democratic Party, that instantly grants immunity from scrutiny. Feeding Our Future was a classic middleman operation, receiving huge administrative fees. Over $18 million for sponsoring the fraudulent meal sites. They use this position to solicit direct bribes, often disguised as consulting fees, from the groups they were supposed to be supervising. The criminals then establish dozens of shell companies and fake nonprofits purely to enroll, receive federal money, and quickly launder the proceeds. This complex cozy network is the lifeblood of modern democratic politics. You rely on politically friendly nonprofit groups to provide services and eventually campaign support, creating a self-sustaining system that actively resists external auditing. We see the same pattern everywhere. Oregon was forced into ending Measure 110 drug treatment grants over misuse of funds. And Washington State was slammed for 86 problems against nearly a dozen state agencies for either not complying with federal grant rules or not fully accounting for spending. New York migrant shelter contracts were criticized for being ripe for abuse. Reason 4 for the fraud success. No one in government pays a price for failure. So, the failures never stop. Despite hundreds of millions in stolen money, not a single high-ranking Minnesota official has resigned. In fact, Minnesota Democrats have spent more time downplaying or deflecting the scandal than acknowledging their role in ending it. Governor Tim Walz. And let me just interject there. Again, this is Lou speaking. Wasn't he the man that could have been our vice president and then conceivably become president of the United States not so long ago? Yep, that was him, all right. Going on with the article, Governor Tim Walz, whose administration failed to detect or stop the massive fraud, now talks tough about holding scammers accountable, then immediately pivots to attacking President Trump for calling Somali fraudsters garbage, casting himself as a defender of the Somali community. Walz and his allies act outraged so they can claim the moral high ground, yet these are the same people who spent the past 6 years branding white Americans as racists and blaming them for a supposed white supremacy culture that conveniently justified the racially selected social justice programs now exposed as vehicles for fraud. The lack of accountability is standard practice. California lost over $20 billion. Yes, that's $20 billion with a B. In fraudulent unemployment claims, including to death row inmates. Not a single major political figure suffered consequences. When the government rewards incompetence and punishes no one, incompetence becomes standard operating procedure. And reason five, for the success of the fraud, Democrats refuse to admit big government fails. Bill fraud gets denied, minimized, or politically reframed. Democrats treat big government as infallible. If the system fails, it must be because critics are racist, or Republicans are politicizing it, or journalists are overhyping it. It can never be that the programs themselves are ripe for corruption. So the cycle repeats, with bigger budgets and even less accountability. The Feeding Our Fathers, make that Feeding Our Future scandal, is being sold as a Minnesota embarrassment. It's much bigger than that. It's a warning about what happens when you can combine ideological blinders, political patronage, oversized government programs, and zero accountability. Minnesota just got caught. Other states are simply waiting their turn. And again, this appeared in Fox News, authored by Jason Rantz on December 8th, 2025. A little comment at the bottom says Jason Rantz is the author of What's Killing America? Inside the Radical Left's Tragic Destruction of Our Cities. And he's a frequent Fox News guest, and he's the host of the Jason Rantz Show, which can be heard weekday afternoons on station KTTH in Seattle. It says you can subscribe to his podcast by going to @JasonRantz, R-A-N-T-Z. Well, all right. Big money, big corruption. They seem to go together, don't they? You're listening to the Divided Kingdom radio show. I'm Lou Cavalli. If you'd like to write to me, just write Lou Cavalli, L-O-U-C-A-V, as in Victor, E-R-L-Y, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And we get a lot of folks coming from all over the place. They have a neat little stamp that shows the Wiseman following the Star of Bethlehem, and you can get your Christmas cards stamped with that special stamp at our little post office. It's pretty small. We're just a little tiny crossroads, but this time of year, we get a lot of folks coming from as far away as Baltimore, which is I guess about 70-odd miles away from here, across the Chesapeake Bay. So again, I'd love to have you write to me. Our contributions have kind of dropped off, which I think is probably par for the course at a holiday season when everybody's so busy, but if you could help us out a little bit to keep the program on the air with the donation, that would be wonderful. But write to me, Luke Caverly. Again, that last name is spelled C-A-V-E-R-L-Y. And the address is Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. You can also visit our website. There are many good essays still available there. I need to write some new ones to tell you the honest truth of the matter. And with all the things in the news, there are plenty of good topics, so I'm going to try and get some put in real soon. And you can go to the website, Divided Kingdom Radio. That's all one word, DividedKingdomRadio.com. And you can see the other venues by which you can listen to the program. You can also hear back programs on that website by going to the archives. Now, what else do we have? Well, here's an article that appeared in the New York Post December 8th, which was Monday. Biden was warned his softened immigration proposals would cause chaos, but he ignored it. Damning memo reveals. This is by Emily Crane. President Joe Biden was warned by advisors that his immigration plans could lead to chaos at the U.S. border, but he ignored them. A newly uncovered memo reveals. That is not. Again, let me put my two cents worth in. This is Lou speaking. Did Biden ignore them, or was Biden oblivious to the whole thing? Did his advisors ignore them? Well, I don't know. At least sometimes you get the feeling Joe Biden didn't really know what was going on a lot of the time. And maybe he did. I don't know. I wasn't there. I wasn't privileged to be in the power broker's seats of power. Well, going on now is that it's Biden's team doled out the advice to Biden when he was still campaigning against President Trump back in 2020. The New York Times reported, and here's a quote, "A potential surge could create chaos and a humanitarian crisis, overwhelm processing capacities, and imperil the agenda of the new administration," Biden's advisors wrote. Now, this appeared in the New York Times, and on one radio station the other day, this, of course, is Lou speaking now about the article. They were saying, where was the New York Times, the so-called paper of records, when Biden was in office? And this might have done some good to put a little pressure on them. But, of course, they waited till he was out of office, and it wouldn't affect his presidency. Well, that's the way things often happen. Back to the article. President Joe Biden, now that's just a caption for a picture. President Joe Biden speaks during a press briefing, August 24th, 2024. Well, I can't show you a picture over the airwaves, so we'll get back to the main text of the article. The memo warns that a huge influx is possible. That is immigration we're talking about, given Biden's approach, a backlog from the Trump administration, and COVID hardships. His team offered up steps that Biden, now 83, could take to thwart an influx of illegal migrants, including ways to reject immigration claims more easily, potentially holding asylum seekers in reception centers until their cases could be heard, and transferring them to other countries. Biden, however, opted to ignore the advice. When Biden took office, just months later, his policy advisors continued to urge the administration to crack down on border crossings and increase border enforcement. The advice fell on deaf ears, again, after top aides suggested a crackdown would alienate progressive voters and that immigration wasn't a major concern for Americans living in non-border states. In the first 3 months of Biden's stint in the White House, the spike in border crossings had already surpassed any record from the previous Trump administration. His policy advisors also floated the idea of the feds helping local officials transport migrants to their ultimate destinations within the U.S. to ease pressure on border towns. The plan, which was similar to the campaign Texas Governor Greg Abbott ended up running, that saw busloads of migrants sent to New York, was rejected because Biden's aides argued it would only encourage more asylum seekers. The crucial errors cost him the 2024 election, according to ex-Biden administration officials. Biden, for his part, blamed the flaws in his immigration agenda on Republicans who blocked his administration's efforts. And again, this is Lou. I seem to remember that Biden, after saying he couldn't do anything near the end of his term, did take some actions. And that's what it says here. But all during the three and three quarters years of his one and only term as president, Biden said, we can't do that. We can't take action. Only the Congress can. But in the end, he did. So finishing up the article, he, that is Biden, ended up using his authority to shut the border without Congress towards the tail end of his 2024 presidential campaign. Quote, when it became clear Congress wouldn't act, Biden took decisive action on his own, unquote, a spokesperson for Biden told the Times in a statement. Well, he should have done that years before. Once again, that was from the New York Post by Emily Crane, December 8, 2025. The title, Biden was warned his soft on immigration proposals would cause chaos, but he ignored it. A damning memo reveals. And I was going to get the whole thing from the New York Times, but, well, they want you to subscribe. They won't let you get these articles like some of the other outlets will. So I said, okay, we'll just get the highlights. But if you do want to see the whole thing, I believe it was on Sunday's New York Times. If you want to pay the money to get it after the fact, that would have been December 7th, Pearl Harbor Day, in fact. All right. Now, let's go back to Fox News for a minute. We had the battle that my intrepid listeners in Massachusetts know all too well about. The battle between the federal government and certain Democrat state governments, like my old home state of Massachusetts, and in particular, the mayor of Boston. No, we can't. We can't let you touch our immigrants. That's not right. You can't. Just because they broke the law, you can't do anything. That's what they say. That is the Massachusetts folks. And a good many others. But now we're going to switch to New York City. This is on Fox News, December 7th, 2025, by Greg Warner. That's spelled W-E-H-N-E-R. The main headline says, New York City mayor-elect tells residents how to resist ICE agents knocking at their door in a new video. Starring Man Downey, releases a video after Manhattan immigration raid. New York City Mayor-elect Zohran Mamdani on Sunday released a video outlining New Yorkers' rights during encounters with U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement after an attempted raid in Manhattan, pledging that his administration will safeguard immigrant communities while protecting the city's constitutional right to protest. The video comes as immigration enforcement in New York faces renewed scrutiny, underscoring how Mamdani plans to confront federal actions he says threatens immigrant communities and demand that New Yorkers be prepared, informed, and confident in asserting their legal rights. In the video, Mamdani opens by recalling an ICE raid last weekend in Manhattan that sought to detain immigrants. This is a quote from Mandani. As mayor, I'll protect the rights of every single New Yorker. And that includes the more than 3 million immigrants who call this city their home. But we can all stand up to ICE if you know your rights, unquote. He then offered guidance for immigrants who may encounter ICE. And Donnie said, quote, first, ICE cannot enter into private spaces like your home, school, or private areas of your workplace without a judicial warrant signed by a judge. If ICE does not have a judicial warrant signed by a judge, you have the right to say, I do not consent to entry, and the right to keep your door closed, unquote. He noted that ICE may present paperwork claiming authority to make an arrest, but said that is false. And again, these are the words of the mayor-elect, Mamdani. ICE is legally allowed to lie to you, but you have the right to remain silent. If you're being detained, you may always ask, am I free to go? Repeatedly until they answer you, unquote. All right, you get the idea about that one. I'm not going to read you all the fine details. I'll jump down a little bit. The video comes more than 2 weeks after the mayor-elect met with President Donald Trump, appearing to forge a new path in their relationship as they found common ground on affordability issues and improving conditions in New York. Despite that meeting, Mamdani reaffirmed New York's status as a sanctuary city during a speech at a church in the Bronx. All right, well, that's the main point there, so there's going to be a little friction. Later on, we'll talk a little bit about my old, I didn't live in the city of Boston, but I was not too far away from it as growing up. Well, now, what else do we have for you? We've got a couple other things from Fox News, a little bit from the New York Post. And by the way, the Minnesota matter of fraud is still pretty active. Fox News on their website actually has a little, I guess you call it a tab at the top. If you want to jump to the various stories about the Minnesota debacle, you can do so and not have to wade through other topics. So an active story that is still being told. Okay, now we're going to switch to crime. And illegal immigrant crime in particular. This also was on Fox News, December 6th. Let's see. December 6th would have been Saturday, I believe. December 6th, 2025, by Alexandra Koch, K-O-C-H, Rachel Wolf, Bill Mulligan, Fox News. The headline reads, suspect in second Charlotte light rail stabbing ID'd as twice deported illegal immigrant with criminal history. Oscar Solozano, 33, allegedly broke into railroad cars while intoxicated before attacking the victim. Court records obtained by Fox News Digital revealed a man charged in a violent stabbing on a Charlotte, North Carolina light rail on Friday is a criminal illegal immigrant previously deported multiple times. Now, I have to give my 2 cents worth in here because this is a question I've been asking myself for months. Why, if they're criminals and they've committed crimes in this country, are they merely being deported and not locked up? I don't know. Is it because the criminal activities were in some other country and not here in the USA? I really don't know. I think that's a question that Americans should ask. Why don't you slap their butts in jail? Now, of course, I realize that even in this country, you can commit a lot of crimes, some violent, and still be walking the streets. This has become a scandal in my eyes, and I think in the eyes of a lot of those of you who are listening to this radio program. But let's read on. this Fox News article, Oscar Olozano, 33, of Honduras, was arrested in the stabbing and is charged with attempted first-degree murder, assault with a deadly weapon with serious injury, breaking and entering a motor vehicle, carrying a concealed weapon, and intoxicated disruptive behavior, according to multiple Department of Homeland Security, DHS, sources and arrest warrants obtained by Fox News Digital. Bond was not set due to Solano's immigration status, according to a release order filed in Mecklenburg County. Okay, let me say something about that. Why would you give a violent criminal like this the ability to even post bond? Why not lock him up and keep him in jail so he doesn't harm somebody else? Why would bond even be a possibility for first-degree murder, premeditated murder? I am not a lawyer. I don't claim to be. But to me, that is a big, big, big question. And I know a lot of these DAs in the big cities, you can do almost anything and never get put in jail. And if you do get put in jail, you're quickly out, because they do not want to prosecute much of anybody. Well, I'm not a lawyer. Never will be, so somebody else is going to have to answer those questions for me. But continuing with this Fox News article, he was booted from the country by the Trump administration in March 2018 on a deportation order and re-entered illegally during the, guess what, Biden administration. At the Texas border in March 2021, DHS sources said, Olozano was deported a second time by the Biden administration and re-entered illegally as a gotaway at an unknown time and location. At about 4:49 p.m. Friday, Charlotte Mecklenburg Police Department officers responded to a call regarding assault with a deadly weapon. When they arrived, they found the victim identified as Kenyan Kareem Shamara Dobie with a stab wound, according to warrants. CMPD, that's Charlotte Mecklenburg Police Department, noted Dobie was in critical but stable condition when he was taken to a hospital. Prior to the attack, warrants allege Olozano broke into a railroad car, quote, with the intent to commit a felony, unquote, while carrying a large fixed-blade knife. While intoxicated, he challenged Dobie to a fight, cursing and shouting at others using, quote, unintelligible and slurred words, unquote, according to court documents. Olozano has a prior conviction for robbery in the U.S. and prior arrests for aggravated battery with a deadly weapon, resisting arrest, and false ID, DHS sources said. Court records indicate he had known aliases, including Solozano Garcia, Oscar Gerardo, and Kevin Garcia. Solozano has a scheduled court appearance December 8th and will later be released into Immigration and Customs Enforcement custody, it is ICE, according to a release order. He is being provided with a Spanish interpreter, according to arrest records. And although I don't have the picture in front of me, it has a caption here that I did get the caption that says, on that other famous Charlotte, North Carolina case, Irina Zarutska curls up in fear as a man looms over her during a disturbing attack August 22nd on a Charlotte, North Carolina light rail train. And you can see the actual picture if you go to the website Fox News for the date December 6th. That's part of this article. Now, as we continue with the article, the stabbing attack comes months after Ukrainian refugee Irina Zarutska, 23, was fatally stabbed on an LYNX Blue Line light rail while on her way home from work. DeCarlos Brown Jr., 34, who was accused of killing Zarusa, was charged with violence against a railroad carrier and mass transportation system, resulting in death, a capital offense under federal law. President Donald Trump reacted to the news on True Social Saturday, saying, quote, another stabbing by an illegal migrant in Charlotte, North Carolina. What's going on in Charlotte? Democrats are destroying it like everything else, piece by piece, unquote. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy also chimed in, calling out Charlotte Mayor V.I. Lyles in an X post. And this is that quotation from Sean Duffy. Apparently, the death of Irina Zarutsky wasn't enough. What is it going to take for Charlotte at CLT mayor, I guess that's the mayor of Charlotte, to remove violent criminals off the streets and protect her constituents, Duffy wrote. The time to act is now, unquote. The Department of Homeland Security, ICE, and CMPD, again, that's Charlotte Mecklenburg Police Department, did not immediately respond to additional inquiries from Fox News Digital. Okay, so, disappeared on FoxNews.com by Alexander Koch, Rachel Wolf, Bill Malugin, and it was published December 6th, 2025. You want to look at the accompanying pictures. And I think every American who is law-abiding has to be asking, why are these criminals walking the streets? I'm not sure it was this one that killed the girl on the Charlotte train, stabbed her from behind, but one of these criminals that's been in the news had been arrested something like 70-odd times. Why is he out in the street? There ought to be some means by which these violent perpetrators get pulled in and locked up for lengthy sentences. And today, it hardly seems possible, but it's 45 years since the death of John Lennon. Another cold-blooded killing by Mark David Chapman in this case. And that man has, I think it's 14 times he has applied to get out on parole, on probation, whichever applies. I never got those straight in my mind, whichever is the correct term. Why, in my mind, maybe I'm just an old-fashioned hanging judge type, why is it even a question that he would be allowed out anytime for the rest of his life? Why isn't he being locked up forever until he dies? He killed a man who happened to be a very famous man, a great singer, but it really shouldn't matter that much who he killed. The fact that he killed him in cold blood, premeditated, that ought to be enough to lock him up for the rest of his life, in my opinion, without any benefit of parole whatsoever. Maybe I'm the hanging judge type. Maybe I'm the vindictive type. Maybe I'm the vengeful type. Or maybe I'm just the type that doesn't like to think that a man who would do this is back out in the streets in 15, 20, 25 years. That same Mark David Chapman is coming up for another parole hearing. He's been denied over and over again, but he's coming up for another hearing, I think, in February, I think it's 2027, a little more than a year into the future. Is he going to get out eventually? Well, in my opinion, he should not. But that's me. All right, I'll give you my 2 cents worth. Let's move on. What else do we have here? All right, a little anti-Semitism. New York Post. F grades handed to 14 colleges in anti-Semitism And this was in the New York Post by Ronnie Rees, R-E-Y-E-S, December 8, 2025. And the subtitle says, Columbia University student recounts anti-Semitism on campus before hearing in D.C. Well, are we becoming what Nazi Germany was in the years before World War II, in the early 1930s, mid-1930s? I hope not, but when you read these articles, you begin to wonder. It says a whopping 39% of Jewish college students have had to hide their identities on campus, while 62% said they have been directly blamed for Israel's military action in Gaza, according to a new report obtained by the Post. The civil rights group Stop Anti-Semitism, that's its title, Stop Anti-Semitism, issued its 2025 so-called report cards grading how 90 colleges address the spreading hatred against Jews on campuses, with 14 schools flunking the exam, including two New York City universities. Quote, this report exposes a disturbing and undeniable reality. Anti-Semitism on American college campuses is systemic and tolerated, and in many cases enabled by the very institutions tasked with protecting our American kids. Stop Anti-Semitism founder Liara Rez said in a statement. And a picture that they have has a caption, Columbia University, onto the anti-Israeli encampment protest, received an F grade from Stop Anti-Semitism 2025 report card, according to the New York Post. Oh, that's the credit. Picture credit is the New York Post. Now, back to the text of the article. With anti-Semitism on the rise across the globe following the October 7, 2023 Hamas terrorist attack against Israel, students at 90 colleges in the U.S. have reported feeling unsafe on their campuses, according to Stop Anti-Semitism Student Survey. About 58% of respondents say they have personally experienced anti-Semitism on campus, with only 12% claiming that the reported incidents were, quote, properly addressed, unquote. Another 65% described feeling unwelcome in specific campus spaces as anti-Israel protests run amok, with 58% agreeing that their schools have failed to protect them. Both Columbia University and the New School, I guess that's the name of the school, I'm not familiar with it, the New School, which saw massive anti-Israeli protests break out since the October 7th terrorist attack, received an F grade for allowing this culture of pervasive anti-Semitism to run rampant. Jewish students at the school felt administrators did not do their job to curb anti-Semitism, with many feeling that they were being directly blamed for Israel's actions. Now, the 14 schools that received F grade were Brown University, Columbia University, Harvard, MIT, the New School, Northwestern, Pomona College, Portland State, University of California, Berkeley, University of California, Davis, University of Oregon, University of Pennsylvania, University of Washington, and Yale. And the article goes on to say, at Columbia, Jewish students have faced repeated anti-Semitic incidents, including vandalism, hate-filled emails, and disruptions glorifying extremist violence, the report said. It added, federal investigators found the university showed deliberate indifference for these issues and threatened to halt hundreds of millions in funding. And it slammed the New School for similar allegations. This is a fairly lengthy article, so let me skip down a bit. I see we're getting down to about the last 15 minutes or so. Let's see. Students at the University of Pennsylvania also said they felt unsafe on campus since protests erupted following the October 7th terrorist attacks. The report claimed the case was the same for the other family Ivy League members, finding their campuses and labeling them, quote, unsafe for Jewish students, unquote. Let's see now. Dartmouth received the highest grade of any Ivy League school in this year's report with a B rating. Dartmouth, because it was in New Hampshire. George Washington U received a D. That's in Washington, D.C. Only 15 schools received an A in the report, including Baylor, Clemson, Elon, and Colorado State. Cornell, which received an F grade last year, was bumped up to a C, with Stop Anti-Semitism noting that the administration has worked to address some of the concerns from Jewish students about safety on campus. The report said, quote, Cornell students reported multiple anti-Semitic incidents, raising concerns about safety in campus climate. The administration addressed them and affirmed its commitment to inclusivity, though some students felt support and enforcement were inconsistent. Well, the article goes on a bit longer, and they show a picture, front page picture of a New York Post article that appeared October, I believe it's October 12th, pretty fine print. I think it was October 12th. Let me get my magnifying glass here. October 12th, 2023. And the big headline across the whole front page says, Schooled on Hate. And that's one example of coverage. Shows a bunch of students with a big banner that says, Justice for Palestine. All right, so that gives you some good idea. So if you want to read the whole article, it came from the New York Post. It was entitled, F Grades Handed to 14 Colleges, etc., and was published December 8th, 2025. Well, let's see now. I think it's time to get a few of the articles that my friend in Massachusetts sent. He always sends excellent articles, and sadly, we just don't have time to read them all. But let me give you a few of the headlines, at least, maybe a few paragraphs in some of them. Here's a good one that appeared in the New York Post Sunday, November 30th. And the headline reads, Ambushed in D.C. Enemies walk right in. Well, let me read a little bit of that so we know what it's talking about. This is about the National Guard, the two who were shot to death. National Guard members are on the move in Washington, D.C., trying to make their patrols less predictable. In the wake of the ambush that left one soldier dead and another critically wounded, small groups of Guard members briskly maneuvered through the city's downtown on foot on Friday, including just across the street from where suspect Ramanawa Lakhanwal allegedly brutally gunned down Sarah Beckstrom, 20, and Andrew Wolf, 24. Before the Wednesday attack, Guard members were stationed often in pairs at fixed locations, including D.C.'s Metro, main thoroughfares, and the National Mall. And here's a quote, we've got to set everything to kind of a higher standard. Let me get that so I can see it a little bit better. We've got to set everything to a higher standard versus kind of relaxed, you know, how it used to be, one guardsman who asked for anonymity told the Post. He went on, you've had some individuals coming up heckling you before, and now it's just kind of always be on the alert. Well, that is a good idea. Keep moving, at least you're not quite so much of a target. And once again, this alleged killer, Ramanua Lakhanwal, was one of those who came to America under Biden's programs. One of thousands of Afghan asylum seekers. And how many of those are nice, law-abiding citizens? And how many of those are killers? We just don't know. Here's another update. Actually, this is one of the earlier ones, but it's still very good, from the New York Post, November 24th. Fraud scheme sent Minnesota tax. Better read the second half of this on a separate page. Fraud scheme sent Minnesota tax dollars to Somali Qaeda group. Now, that's something that the previous article didn't cover. It says here, Minnesota is drowning in fraud. Billions in taxpayer dollars have been stolen during the administration of Governor Tim Walz alone. Democratic state officials overseeing one of the most generous welfare regimes in the country are asleep at the switch. Oh, this, by the way, was by Christopher F. Rufo, R-U-F-O, and Ryan Thorpe. Want to give credit there. And the media, duty-bound by progressive pieties, refuse to connect the dots. In many cases, the fraud has allegedly been perpetrated by members of Minnesota's sizable Somali community. Federal counterterrorism sources confirm that millions of dollars in stolen funds have been sent back to Somalia, where they ultimately landed in the hands of the Al-Qaeda-linked terror group Al-Shabaab. And that, by the way, is spelled Al-Shabaab. But that's what they're talking about when they say that these stolen funds may have gone to terrorists. And lots of those stolen funds, too. And some of the headlines, sub-headlines, read, Medicaid and Easy Mark, racism defense. Jason Rams talked about that previously. Autism kickbacks. I guess some of those were supposed to go for programs. And oh, there's just lots more here. You want to check into that? I disappeared in the paper version of the New York Post on Monday, November 24th. And entitled again, Fraud Schemes and Minnesota Tax Dollars to Somali Qaeda Groups. That's Al Qaeda. Well, what are some of the other headlines? Enemies among us. 5,005 Afghans with national security flags. This is talking about that same man who got into the USA, supposedly because they wanted to be nice. And when they evacuated suddenly in that clumsy, ill-fated evacuation of Afghanistan, he was one of the ones that was let into the country with little or no vetting. Nobody would know whether a lot of these were authentic people loyal to the U.S. who had helped out. This guy, I think, was supposedly helping out the CIA. But how do we know that he was real? Or was he just setting up a, what's the right word? Well, setting himself up so that he can come into the country and cause havoc at the right time. I don't know. Some say he was radicalized after he came in the country. Perhaps so. I don't know. Here's one from my home state by Howie Codd. He's always entertaining in the Boston Herald. Ely's, that's the governor of Massachusetts, Ely's ambition, a bill you picked up. I'll just read a couple paragraphs here. Governor Mara Ely was willing to do anything, absolutely anything, to ingratiate herself enough with the Biden kleptocracy to assure herself a 2025 ticket out of the crumbling Commonwealth and to a cabinet role as the first lesbian, blah, blah, blah. It was not to be, thank God. But hold it. Ely's failure was not for a lack of trying. She squandered close to $4 billion, again, that's with a B, $4 billion in taxpayer funds on her foreign freeloader flop houses. That is the inventive way of talking about all these hotels and motels that were given over to migrants. And Howie Carr continues, but that wasn't all. We now learn, thanks to a congressional investigation, that she blew at least another $779,000 on putting out more hordes of invaders from the third world at Logan Airport. Logan, of course, is the main Boston airport, the international airport. If Biden's puppet master said jump, she said how high? Anything to get a free ride to Washington out of the catastrophe she created here in Massachusetts. Remember how in 2023, when swarms of these surly, entitled freeloaders suddenly materialized in Terminal E, of all places, the international terminal, they just arrived and suddenly the state police F troop was delivering pizzas to them, probably from Antarpia's, who must be a famous Boston pizza place. The Haitian criminals vacationing amongst us always insist on the best. Well, that gives a little idea. Things are still not settled down in Boston, if they ever will be. That was by Howie Carr from the Boston Herald. I have a date on that one. Let me see now. Well, don't have a date on that one, but I'm sure it still is relevant. Hey, if you can, write to me. A little donation would be helpful. Things are a little slack this time of year. Thank you for listening. It's Lou Cavalli. Hear us on this network every Thursday evening and every Saturday morning. Or go to my website, DividedKingdomRadio.com, and you can go to the archives and hear us anytime. Thank you for listening. Have a good week. Good night.